You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Something's coming.
Stand by.
Hold on to your hats. Here we go.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 119. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
Whatevs.
Still sounding sexy with the new blue ball mic.
Blue balls for life.
I don't think that's what it's called, but I call them a blue ball mic. Speaking of mics, joining us is from Splatcast podcast,
that
Mike
is
Delaney.
Wrong name.
What? Splatcast.
It's not Splathouse. The name of it.
It's not God called it. The Splatcast.
Splathouse.
Splathouse. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. It's all good.
I've been on vacation. That's my excuse. I'm gonna stick to it.
That's no excuse.
I had 10 days of gluttony and debauchery. Actually, it's just a family vacation. But
I was about to say, it's kind of weird.
It looked really cute.
It was nice. It was a nice family vacation up towards Tahoe.
It had a very Norman Rockwell feel for the debauchery.
Yeah. There was some white wine consumed at a winery.
There was a lot of white going on that vacation.
Yeah, definitely. There was some microbrews consumed. But yeah, very tame.
Jesus Christ.
Although my uncle did pour me,
oh my God.
He poured me a wine glass full of $125 Glenfiddich, 25-year-old Scotch.
Damn, Glen, fuck it, drink it.
I drank it, and then the next day he accused me of drinking his whole bottle of Glenfiddich. I was like, dude, you're a heavy pourer. He denied it. Luckily, I don't owe him another bottle.
There you go.
All right. Today, we are going to be doing our What's on Your Doorstep segment, followed by, I believe, news with Josh Obershaw.
Okay.
Then we'll be talking. Brad's jealous because he's not included in the news segment.
No. Dude, these episodes would run 6 hours.
Followed by a conversation about Blue Underground's Manhattan Baby and Arrow's The Bloodstained Butterfly.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, we watched Manhattan Baby?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you told me to watch Manhattan Baby. So I came here with a hot take on pedophilia and jazz, man.
Damn it. Well, hey, we'll hear. We'll welcome the conversation.
Okay.
First, let's jump into what's on your doorstep.
Holy cow! I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
Okay. Would you just open something?
I'm shaking my shaker bottle.
Of what?
It's like a dehydrated coconut water fruit punch recovery drink thing. I don't know.
Jesus Christ!
Some bro shit. It tastes good though. I mean,
it's so funny you make thirsty. Fun of bros, but you're turning into one like month by month. You have some like other shit that you do.
If I was snapping selfies of me in the gym every morning, then
you do snap selfies.
No, I don't. I did like one or two within the past year.
It's a gateway selfie.
Yeah. I promise I will not dive in that far. You
drink your dehydrated nut coconut.
I don't know, it's just a beverage. It's supposed to rehydrate you.
I'm a man. I'm fucking drinking purple Gatorade right now.
I'm still recovering from that bottle of Glenfiddich I drank.
You drank the whole thing.
I probably did.
Yeah.
I had a really big hangover the next morning.
How are the screenshots of your Fitbit different than a selfie?
Screenshots of my Fitbit? I don't.
Yeah, like when you send out the Fitbit.
That's like automated. I need to turn that crap off.
Yeah, just 3 years later, out. I'm going to turn it off.
Well, you set crap like that and you forget about it. I'm like, it's doing nobody any good.
Oh, there's Sean's 5 a.m. tweet about Nike.
Oh, shit. All right. Well, I'll go first.
Okay.
Because I didn't really get to watch much. I did watch, this isn't horror, but I did watch
Girl. Is Mike fucking his mic?
Yes, I believe so.
Is he like getting out of the car or something? What is that noise?
I think he's getting his car just driving away. He just said, fuck it, I'm out.
No, I'm here, guys. Can you hear me? I got to find a fucking power source.
Oh, all these devices.
You should do that before the show.
Yeah, I did. Whole thing's a fucking nightmare.
Well, I was going to say, like, you know, Splathouse is so well produced and so well put together. Like, how long does that take you? Like a month? Like, you're like fucking this up right now. I mean, we're shitty quality, but goddamn, Mike. He's gone.
Yeah, all right.
Go ahead, Sean.
All right. Yeah. You're getting a peek behind the curtain of Splat
Splatcast.
A Splat House. Anyway, I'll go.
Mike, do you know we're recording right now?
I'm not editing this shit out either.
What was that noise?
I don't got enough time.
Is he out of the call now?
Oh, no. Oh, this is amazing. Hold on.
Is it?
And things like, I'm just like, should I edit this or not? I don't know. I haven't taken any notes yet.
It was funny because someone just mentioned of all the times, like, I forget, one of the listeners said something about all the times you say you're going to edit something out on the show, but you say that, but it's never edited out.
Nah, I don't.
Make a note to cut this. All right, so cool. What's on your doorstep?
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yes.
All right, cool. I'm back. Thank you. Sorry about that, guys.
It sounds like you're deliberately like trying to sabotage a screen. This is what it is, man. He's coming on here to sabotage us.
Absolutely not. Couldn't possibly do that.
We sabotage ourselves enough. I
would take offense to that.
Well, hey guys, there's no way you can derail your shit because you guys already derail it every week.
Yeah, take spirits intended, man.
All right, here we go. I only got a few. My wife and I watched Girl Fight with Michelle Rodriguez. Oh. Not horror, but goddamn, what a movie. Anyway, moving along. That sucker needs like a Criterion release.
It's great, but what the fuck are you mentioning Girl Fight?
I don't know. It's what I watched. I didn't get to watch much. Unless I mention all the kid movies that Linga played Dorr, on our
the
our
director show. Of The Invitation, and The Invitation is great, so watch Girl Fight.
Yes, yep.
And Denver's Body.
Totally. And that was the connection, the horror.
There
connection.
We go, okay.
Because I was watching it, I was thinking, holy shit, like she, directed Jennifer's Body and then The Invitation, which I haven't seen yet, but,
Jesus.
All right, next thing I watched that I really want to talk about was Mel Gibson is in a new film called Blood Father, and it's really fucking good. So it's about this guy, he's probably like 2 weeks sober, he's a ex-biker, in and out of prison, and his daughter's been missing for many years, and one day he gets a phone call from his daughter, and she's into some stuff, into some shit, and she needs some help, and he drives out to LA or wherever to pick her up, and realizes she's in a lot of trouble with some cartel guys, and the movie takes off from there. Really good. Bearded Mel Gibson, I think, is my favorite Mel Gibson, because he's like, there's just that little bit of, even more like unhinged Mel Gibson madness when he has his full beard. Unfortunately, he shaves it off, and they use his shaved face on the cover of the Blu-ray, which they should just do a picture of him with this gigantic beard and be done with it. Anyway,
It's but the beard that gives him the power?
I think so.
Yeah.
I like Bearded Mel Gibson. Anyway, the movie's really good. He's really good. He's been missed. I think the last film I saw, oh shit, what was that called?
Expendables 3?
Not Expendables 3. Jesus Christ. It's the one where he's basically in like a Mexican prison.
Get the Gringo.
That was really good. But Bloodfather's solid. You should check it out. And it's probably one of those that'll end up on Netflix at some point. But the Blu-ray's pretty cheap. And that's Bloodfather. Really happy that Mel Gibson's kind of getting back in the saddle. And I want to see his new World War II flick as well. Him behind the director's chair is always welcomed. All right. Moving along to actual horror here. I broke out my German Blu-ray of Sinjinor. Das Synthetik-Skirchen-Spermitz. Is what
Jesus Christ.
Previously on a Synapse DVD. I think this is just a DVD master messed with a little bit. It looks kind of wonky in HD. But the movie itself, a fun little aliens ripoff, I should say. I don't know. There's not really much. If you've seen Aliens, you kind of know the plot. But basically, these monsters are bred for military use, and they get out in some sort of building. Pretty much it. But did you guys know that there was a? This is a sequel to a 19.
Yeah.
What year was their sequel like?
Well, Sinjinor is the sequel. Scared to Death is the original.
Yeah, Scared to Death. So I need to track down Scared to Death now.
The movie's like takes completely like place in the dark. The whole entire movie, you can't see anything. It's crazy, but.
Nice. Sinjinor, fun. The German Blu-ray is pretty cheap, but there's some really wonky stuff going on. You can tell that they basically did some digital cleanup on some sort of HD master or just some sort of shitty quality. But you know, what it is, it's a fun time. That's all I got.
Brad?
That's it?
That's it. I was on vacation, man. I wasn't watching movies on vacation.
Should. I watch movies on vacation.
I was in, like, wooded area, like, Tahoe.
You should have filmed one, then. Like,
giant trees and...
Wait, did you film any movies? Any sexy movies?
Hell yeah, I did.
Dang.
This is like coming across as, like, the weirdest family vacation known to man. I sound... This just sounds awful.
I'm just trying to make it fucked up because I hate you. So, are you, like, on the Eiffel Tower right now? Is that what's happening, Mike, with all that? What is that noise?
I don't know. I'm outside my house. It's the only place I could get a Wi-Fi connection. My kids are going to sleep right now. I'm kind of in the same situation as Sean. So.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Then let's hear what you got, Mike.
Yeah, over the last couple of weeks, I've just been watching a lot of movies for the Splathouse podcast, is what it's called, Sean DeRager. So I've been going back, watching a lot of the films that we're profiling, preparing for interviews, etc. But for fun, I went out and purchased the Herschel Gordon Lewis box set, the Feast box set. That thing is gorgeous. I'm sure you've seen the unboxing, or do you have a copy yourself, guys?
I have the big one.
I'm on the fence. I may need to sell some blood to afford it, but I'm working on getting that set.
Grindhousevideo.com has it for 50% off right now at their Arrow sale. I definitely recommend getting on the other side of the fence. The thing's fucking gorgeous. Amazing package. The only one I watched from it so far is one of my favorites, Something Weird. A phenomenal set. The thing that I really love about it, and it's one of the first times I did this for a deluxe box set, is I actually went out and made copies of the booklet that comes with it. They put together this fun little booklet that has puzzles and it has mazes and whatnot. It's in the vein of some get at a carnival. and a Halloween carnival if you're a kid. So I went out and made copies of that, and I've been having my students that I instruct do these H.G. Lewis puzzles around Halloween time. So that's been a lot of fun to kind of get them on Herschel Gordon Lewis as well. Of course, I can't show them any of the pictures. We just stick to Goosebumps and that bullshit. But that was fun watching that recently. And then the other two I picked up were Vinegar Syndrome's releases of Death Row Game Show, and then Rob Hunter's favorite, Hobgoblins. So I'm a big fan of Rick Sloan's Hobgoblins, the Gremlins ripoff from 1988, to kind of go in line with Sean's Aliens ripoff. But yeah, I cuddled up with the Hobgoblins disc, put on the Rick Sloan commentary. Just been enjoying the heck out of that one. It's a piece of shit movie. It's hard to get through, man. But it's one of those comfort films for me that I really enjoy it. All the silly campiness and the shitty little gremlin hobgoblins. So much fun. But beyond that, I watched Masterminds on VHS last night with Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart shit.
Yeah, I found out that was never even released on DVD. It's one of those weird studio movies that from late in the era that's only on VHS. But it's a really bad as this little piece of shit hacker that tries to save his sister's school. It's good. I like it.
Nice.
Yeah, but beyond that, rewatching Miami Connection, rewatching Manos, The Hands of Fate, People Under the Stairs, Cheap Thrills, and Red Rock West to prepare for our new block of episodes at the Splat House.
I'm a big fan of Red Rock West.
Yeah, that's a good one. That was a big influence on the feature film I'm making right now called Medias Res, and I was fortunate enough to actually meet John Dahl years ago through a professor in college and got to know him. And yeah, he was nice enough to come on to the show and talk to us about that picture.
Yeah, I'm a big Joyride fan. So I have always liked John Dahl, especially like Rounders as well.
Yeah, Rounders is his big one for people of our generation, you know, that went to high school when that film came out. Joyride, when I met him in person the first time, he wasn't really keen on talking Joyride too much, I think because it was kind of his better-known film at the time. He was more focused on The Great Raid, talking to me about The Great Raid and working with James Franco. And then he really wanted to talk to me about his newest picture at the time, which was You Kill Me, right, with Ben Kingsley.
Well, yeah.
That was a weird fucking night. Taya Leone was so drunk at this party, and she just kept asking my wife and I if we had her number. And I was like, Becky, we should get her number, right? Like, we should take this opportunity to get Taya Leone's number. But I guess tragically, that's probably when she found out David Duchovny was cheating on her and
oh shit,
an alcoholic. And yeah, but no, high times, man. Good times. That's all I got.
That sounds like a good time. Really good time.
It was a time for sure.
All right, so I'm gonna really shit on what's on your doorstep with part human, part shark, all psychopath. Mark Polonius film Sharkenstein.
Oh,
or Sharkenstein, huh?
Oh, my God.
Whatever you want to say it. I grew up, renting Polonia films at my local video store, like Terror House and Splatter Farm. Shot on video, horror is what he was known for. And seeing something that's brand new, and he still maintains that really goofy aspect and really, I don't care for the film at all, but I admire, because I actually just said this on the last episode when I was talking about Donald Farmer's Shark Exorcist. It's the same thing. Like, both of those guys made direct-to-video films
They both recently made a shark movie, and like they're still doing what they love, and they're just making whatever the fuck they want. I think that's pretty cool. Like, you know, if you're into goofy shark films, which a lot of people are, this might be right up your alley because it has some of the worst special effects I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, they just literally have a, like, claymation shark that they, like, wave in front of the screen when it's coming.
Yes.
And then, like, it just goes, like, it takes up the whole entire screen and flies by, and then somebody's dead. And it, like, it eats them. It's great in that sense. It's just, you know, and it's, of course, Nazis are involved, and they weaponize the shark. I will tell you, there's a little talk about Hitler with the shark, so if you know where this is going, but anyways, fun little film. Next up was Full Moon just released Meridian on, I guess that's how you say it, Meridian?
Yeah.
Charles Band directed film. This is like a, you know, a take on an erotic Beauty and the Beast. It's got some heavy adult themes, but also keeps it kind of, you know, restrained to that point where it doesn't go full-fledged, you know, erotic. Because it's obviously Charles Band is going to some, you know, trying to tell this, like, gothic romance, you know, story while doing, you know, showing Sherilyn Fenn naked. Whoa, by the way. But, you know, it's about two friends. Sherilyn Fenn inherits this castle. Her friend is an artist. She's got to do this painting thing, but she's, you know, goes to Italy for a, you know, kind of a weekend getaway, and they come across this, like, small little circus that's, you know, floating around town. Kind of get involved with the performers, invite them back to the castle. There's a lot of drugs and some kind of a little bit of rapey stuff that happens. And then, you know, it's kind of this, wants to keep that fairy tale mentality, but also wants to kind of, you know, throw the reins down and say, fuck it. And that's like some of these sequences with the sex, like 15 minutes. I was like, what the hell is happening? Like, when does Charles Band start making, like, you know, gothic romance films and takes his, like, little thing obsession? Because, you know, he has, like, fucking 15,000 movies about little things. Like, it's the other dolls, fucking Ghoulies, like, Puppet Masters, Puppets, Shrieker. Like, it's all these, like, he's obsessed with little things attacking
people.
Head of
the family's a little thing.
Yeah, the demonic toys. Like, this guy loves small things. Like, he just loves little creatures. So it was good to see that element, like, completely ignored. There's not even anything little that shows up. I thought there's going to be, like, a little demon that pops up every once in a while. I've actually never seen this film before. This is my first time. But I was really impressed. I wasn't a huge fan of the film, but I was impressed with what I was seeing, what Charles Band was doing. And I know that everybody's like, oh, people are too quick to snub Charles Band these days. And I agree. The guy is a con artist. And, you know, he's done some kind of really, really shitty things in the past few years. But that said, I think he's learned his lesson, obviously. Which, I let me just jump back. When I first got this Blu-ray, I was like, oh, okay, cool. What are they doing? So I see remastered, digitally restored from the original 35mm camera negative. And I was like, is it really? Like, are we just going to get a DVD on a Blu-ray? Is this a Charles Band thing where he's like, oh, 4K scan, new Blu-ray? It actually looks pretty good, so I am going to give him credit on that. But if you are kind of on the Charles Band bandwagon of hating him, you got to think this guy has created so many iconic horror films. And not only did he produce a lot of these films and write and direct a lot of these films, but he also tried to get, like, if you were renting in the video stores in the 80s and 90s, Charles Band had movies for you there because he was running Wizard Video. He was running all of that stuff. He was putting Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Zombie in stores for you to rent. Like, you know, he's a big, like, reason why all of us, if you're a hardcore horror fan, he's one of the reasons why you probably are, because you were able to obtain some of those movies. So I always have Charles Band to thank because of that. You know, I don't ever want to just shit on Charles Band because of the whole VHS big box thing that he did a few years ago and kind of the little lies that he tells every once in a while. But anyways, moving along, we had Nico B on the show a few episodes ago, and he's got his new label, Real Gore, releasing. He also has a Indiegogo now for Cult Epics to release, I think it was at six Blu-rays. Yeah. So he's trying to raise money for that. But this is number two in Real Gore releasing, which I've talked about this film numerous times on the show, so I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it. I originally mentioned this movie probably about a year ago when Pete Toombs was on our show for Mondo Macabro. I asked him about this movie because this would be a perfect movie for them to pick up. And he said the rights were kind of weird and tied up. Well, Real Gore releasing, Nico B's new label, released. It's called Masks. It's a giallo, flick. You know, I rewatched it. I still dig it. You know, it's a giallo film. It's kind of a weird take on Suspiria, but definitely follows more of the giallo aspect rather than the supernatural aspect. You know, it's got great cinematography. It's got one of the girl that plays Stella in this movie. She's probably one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my entire life. But it's got great cinematography. It's got a great score. The score comes with, the Blu-ray, you know, really cool packaging that Nico did on these. So definitely pick it up if you're a fan of giallo films. It is more or less on the kind of the, on a budget giallo, but it shows you that if this movie entertained you a giallo on a budget, then it must be doing something right, because sometimes, you know, if you guys watched Violent Shit the movie, then you kind of know, like, oh, whoa, because that was apparently a giallo film, but I didn't catch that at all. Did you guys watch Violent Shit the remake yet? Nope.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
No, I've been meaning to get to both of those.
You will see it.
Dude, to watch this is crazy. Hey, I just got some inside information about the Phantasm box set. Do you guys want to hear it?
Spill it.
Like right now?
Right now. Just got some information.
What did Josh text you?
So Wellgo Releasing is releasing the Phantasm films. They had run into some red tape with some of the rights to a lot of the special features on some of the other films. I'm being told that all five films will be in the box set.
What were we wondering about Phantasm 2?
Yes. Okay. I was curious about that. So, all five films. They're bringing over a whole lot of extras on all the films, and I'm super pumped. So, exclusive. I don't know exclusive, but this just got word on that. So, So there you go. Because Phantasm Remastered and Ravager are coming out on Blu-ray in December. So, you know, if you want to hold out for the box set, it's definitely happening, and you can probably get rid of your Phantasm 2 Blu-ray. I'm holding out until I see all the specs, though.
Well, I hope that they release the other three singles, because, like, I'm not going to wait for a fucking box set. I like individual discs. I like individual packaging. Like, I'm not a big fan of box sets because, like, the thing is, like, oh, cool, Child's Play box set, all six movies. Guess what? One gets re-released, another one comes out. Like, it's like, what the fuck? You know? Mm-hmm. So that always bothers me. You would be. next up was Artsploitation's Killbillies. They should have stuck with... I mean, Killbillies does catch my eye. Like, as soon as I heard Killbillies, I said, yes, I'm in. But then I, like, look at it, and I'm like, ah, shit. This movie's a little too silly. But the movie's not silly, it's just... It really tries to use that backwoods, like, you know, creature inbred thing. But, you know, kind of Hills Have Eyes, stuff like that. But make it very contained and just overly kind of rapey and brutal. Not my bag, really. But if you're into, like, psychopath hillbillies that are inbred that have, like, you know, cysts all over them, and they want to rape people, then maybe it's for you. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of those movies anyway, so...
I don't know what Arsploitation is doing with their DVD-only releases.
Probably know no one's going to buy these movies.
Yeah.
They're probably playing it smart.
I know. They're releasing...
Because, I mean, it's not a good movie. Like, you know, I'm glad the movie got distribution, but, like, it's one of those things where... Like, you know, they had The Perfect Husband that was, you know, got great reviews. They had Observance that got great reviews. And those movies are decent. But, you know, stuff like Killbillies, like, I don't see anybody... Like, I think the name alone kind of turns people away. Like, people like us, so it's like, oh, God, that sounds hilarious. And then when you find out it's, like, a real movie and it's, like, straightforward, I don't know. It doesn't sound fun anymore.
Hmm. It sounds like a Saturday night... Or a Saturday morning cartoon for like Quentin Tarantino or something. The Killbillies. it's a little too cutesy. But I guess my question is this: you would know this, Brad. Does Artsploitation have a big imprint with streaming online? Like, how are they making their money if it's not through these DVD sales? Why would they?
Well, I mean, they have streaming on Vudu.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you could purchase. They usually have them out on Vudu way before they do on DVD.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's still HD, but I don't know. It's an odd thing. I mean, maybe people do purchase because I think they have a subscription, I think, through their website where you can, like, purchase all their movies or something like that. At one time, I thought they did, but I could be wrong now. They might have taken that away. Because they went, you know, they were, you know, around and just doing DVDs, and then they went bankrupt and kind of disappeared. And then they came back and they released a slew of great movies on Blu-ray, and then they just kind of started doing DVDs again. So I'm waiting for, you know, them to really power forward again here soon.
Like Der Bunker, man, like when that came out, I was like, oh, shit, here we go. Because that film was
fantastic. Well, they had that, like, Der Bunker, they had Observance, and they had Perfect Husband. I wasn't a huge fan of those other two, but I really loved Der Bunker, but... Like, I still enjoyed those films for the most part, but, like, this kind of stuff that they have lined up, I'm not too much into that. Like, I'm glad that they are releasing that kind of weird side of cinema that somebody is, but it's just some of those movies aren't for me. This is MVD released this. I was pleasantly surprised by this movie. I remember hearing about it years ago. When Stephen Biro was talking about, he runs Unearthed Films. He wrote this movie. It's called, I think you'd like this, Mike. It's called Bubba the Redneck Werewolf. and like when I heard the title, I was like, no, I don't want to see that movie. But then it started getting a little bit of praise, and I was like, okay, I knew it was filmed in Florida. I kind of knew the filmmakers that made it. You know, Stephen Biro is a good guy. He's funny. But how far, like, how funny can it be an hour and, you know, 30, 40-minute movie of a guy that turns into a werewolf? Because I do like Wolf Cop, but I like the idea of Wolf Cop more. The movies, they're okay. But, you know, how can we do that again, but with no money? And I was like, well, this isn't Wolf Cop, of course. But, you know, the same aspect. A guy turns into a fucking werewolf. But it's fucking funny. Like, it doesn't keep playing to the werewolf joke. It bounces around. It has some great moments, some great comedy. It gets really stupid at times, but it keeps you entertained. And I was pleasantly surprised by it. Stephen Biro did a pretty good job on that script, I must say. For being a small, independent comedy, using kind of a, you know, just a a redneck turns into a werewolf. Ha ha ha. It actually does put a little laughter in my belly. So I was surprised. If you're into that type of stuff as well, then that's definitely for you, 100%.
Does the wolf have like a cute stripe of red behind the nape of its neck or something?
No. Next up was Warner Archive released Body Snatchers, which I was surprised that they released Body Snatchers on Blu-ray because, I mean, maybe they are seeing that, oh, man, our horror Blu-rays actually sell really well. I was always a fan of this. I'm a fan of every Invasion of the Body Snatchers movie, and there's, what, like fucking 10,000 remakes of it.
Even Invasion with Nicole Kidman?
Invasion's really good, dude.
What?
Invasion's really good.
Man, you need to
watch
it.
I'm with Brad on this one. I love fucking pot people movies. They're incredible. I watched the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers about 2 weeks ago, but man, it holds up. I love that.
Yeah, no, the original was great.
Yeah.
But like each one, they kind of go in a different direction with it, and that's what I love. Like you have three remakes, but none of them are really similar. They have like similarities with certain aspects of it, but they always try to do something new with the story. I like how kind of contained this one is, being it's mainly takes entirely place on a military base, versus, you know, kind of the world, you know, stuff between the, you know, the last two and also Invasion. This one's a little more toned down. And, you know, when you have Ferreira directing this movie and fucking Larry Cohen and Stuart Gordon writing a script.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to repeat that. Larry Cohen and Stuart Gordon writing a script together, basically. Like, holy fucking shit. But I've loved this movie since I was little, and I haven't watched it in years. So it's kind of really, I was really looking forward to watching this again, and it still holds up. There's some really, really cool moments. You know, one kind of towards, what's her name? I always thought she was really beautiful. She plays in Child's Play 2. She's the stepsister. Terry Kinney, is that her name?
That sounds like a name. It's definitely,
I don't know.
Well, anyways, there's a really cool moment towards the end that always like tickles my nuts. I get really excited when that scene happens because it's really fucking cool. But yeah, I mean, standard, you know, people are slowly being taken over by these little pods and they turn into these fucking drones. And like, I mean, it's this fucking Invasion of the Body Snatchers, just a different aspect of it, but, really great film. Great, you know, great disc as far as it looks.
Bare bones, right?
Yeah, it's bare bones. But the picture looks great. It's just an HD master, of course. No tweaking or anything with it. It just looks like, hey, we remastered this years ago. We're going to slap it on a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it. Next up was Cinelicious. They released Belladonna's Sadness. I was kind of looking forward to this because this played at a few festivals. This also played at Fantastic Fest, and I didn't get to see it. Mainly because not too big on the Japanese thing. You know, like I love live action Japanese cinema, but sometimes when I hear, oh, Japanese cartoons or anime, I'm like, oh, there's going to be dicks everywhere and coming. Like, I'm not into this thing. I'm not into anime.
Well, that's stereotyping, Brad.
Well, that's what it is.
Yeah, there's also tentacle, Brad.
Tentai, all this other shit. But anyways, that said, this does have that in there. However, this movie was made like in 1973 or something, and it was released only in Japan and Europe. And then it became as a lost film. And then it was re-released, I think, in Japan on VHS. And then Spectravision and Cinelicious got together and did a, I guess, I think it's a 4K scan of the 35 millimeter, and they also found some lost footage in the film, and they pieced it all together. I'm usually not a fan of these movies, but this is one of my probably favorite new movies of the year. It's odd, and it's definitely not for everybody, but it's a very dark and twisted tale, and very experimental with its art and storytelling, that it grabs you immediately. And some of the imagery in this movie is just so fucking hard. Like, they know what they're doing. And it's odd because it's not, like, all, like, cartoon, like, regular animation. It's a lot of, like, paintings and then panning over the painting while telling a story. Hmm. Does that make sense? Like, have you ever seen that? Kind of like in school when you're watching, like, you know, old, like, you know, instructional, like, history videos. Where, you know, the narrator is panning over the picture or something and telling the story. Well, that's what a lot of it's like. There's also a lot of movement in animation. But it's a lot, like, a lot of it's watercolor paintings, which was kind of new to me. Like, you know, it's a lot of the stuff's hand-drawn. It looks beautiful. But there's a lot of watercolors. And that was kind of, you know, bizarre seeing that. But it's very sexual. It's very phallic-y, and it's kind of got a heartbreaking story. Short, it's about a peasant woman who marries a man. On their wedding night, she gets taken up to this baron. They pay taxes in one cow. He wants 10 cows. They can't afford it, so he takes her, kicks the guy out of the village, takes her and rapes her, and it all kind of dwindles down from there. And it gets really fucking heartbreaking. So if you want to watch something kind of emotional, watch Belladonna Sadness.
If you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it for free.
Yeah, I saw that. That's good to hear, Brad, that you enjoyed it. I'm also not a huge fan of anime, but I had first learned about this movie probably about 10 years ago. I don't think he directed it, but didn't Osamu Tezuka have something to do with it, either writing or
he producing? Didn't direct it, because the guy that directed is like E something. His first name is E. But yeah, it was like a trilogy.
Yeah. And I think Tezuka did a couple of the earlier films, but
This was their last film together. That's the reason why they made it, and then they went bankrupt. That's the reason why the film didn't really go anywhere, because they released it, and then they went bankrupt, and then it was just disappeared.
His more adult stories are fantastic. He did this great adaptation on the life of Buddha that I share with my high school students that is just profound in its storytelling.
Yeah, it's got a great story surrounding, and the narration and the dialogue is very, very powerful. And I don't know, like, it's definitely not for everybody, but if you're really into artsy stuff and want to see a really heartbreaking tale with some kind of haunting imagery as far as, like, drawings and paintings, then this is definitely right up your alley. There's, like, two sequences in the movie where I was watching it, and I was like, I cringed. I was like, oh my God. Like, I couldn't imagine if this, like, there's no way they could show this, like, you know, actually film this with people. Like, it's, I mean, you can't, there's certain things you just can't do, you know. It's just, that's the reason why people like anime, is because there's just, you can't make water, you know, wind or something move the way you want it to. So that's the reason why you can control everything. And the things that they do in this is just, it's really kind of, it's horrifying, some of the sequences. But yeah, definitely check it out. Speaking of Belladonna, this is a good segue. Speaking of Belladonna, I'm a big Tobe Hooper fan. And there's one Tobe Hooper movie that I've never seen until recently, and that was The Mangler. I tweeted out The Mangler is probably the best movie ever made the other day, and a lot of people retweeted and favorited that tweet. And I also got a lot of people saying, what the fuck are you talking about? Well, I am dead fucking serious when I say I fucking love the Mangler. I love Tobe Hooper. I love his insanity. The guy is fucking off his rocker 100%. And the reason why I talk about Belladonna is because they talk about Belladonna in this movie as a drug and stuff like that. But it is about a machine that irons and presses and folds laundry. And it's possessed. And Ted Levine, speaking of Joyride, here's another segue. Ted Levine is like, he's the shit, man. He's always been a great fucking actor. He's great as, you know, fucking Rusty Nail in Joyride. He's great in this. He's great in a movie that just was released a couple years ago. It was like in my top 10 for a little while, called Banshee Chapter. You know, he's great in the Hills Have Eyes remake.
Like, oh yeah, he's phenomenal in that. He's a good dad.
Everything he's in, he is. I just love his voice. Number one, he's got such a yeah. It's another Silence of the Lambs. There you go. But he's such a great actor and just a great character actor. And he's perfect because he can really fucking churn it out sometimes as be playing a crazy person, and he gets to play a crazy person in The Mangler. And that's what I love about Tobe Hooper films. And I don't know if I guess I've always noticed it, and if that person that keeps taking my thoughts and writing them in articles, I swear to God, I'll fucking brain you if you steal this. I love Tobe Hooper's, like, how his heroes are crazy as well as the villains. Like, his villains are already insane, but his heroines, his, you know, his protagonists, they are going crazy at the exact same time. Look at the insanity that is filled in his movies. Like, take Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The family's crazy, but Stretch and Lefty are going fucking crazy at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, they are going insane. The same thing as, like, Poltergeist. We have, you know, the fucking ghosts going there. But look at the family. Look how insane. Look at their insanity that they're going through. Fucking a tree eats a kid, for Christ's sakes. You know?
Or but, Eaten Alive, where
yeah,
everyone's
I was just gonna say,
fucking insane.
Yeah, Eaten yeah. Alive. Like, everybody's insane. The Toolbox Murders, even though people shit on that. Like, you know, it's just – he has such a way of storytelling that it's just – it's like a drug-fueled nightmare. And that's exactly what The Mangler is, and that's why I love it so much. It's just one scene that gets over the top right after the other. And I tell you, that fucking ending when the fucking Mangler does its shit and goes ape shit, oh my God. I had the biggest fucking boner. But yeah, The Mangler, if you haven't seen it, watch it. If it's been a while and you rented it when you were a kid and you're like, that movie sucks, nope. Rewatch it, please, because people's opinions change. This movie kicks so much ass. Yes, it is fucking crazy, but if you love Tobe Hooper's insanity and how crazy he can get, then it deserves a rewatch for sure. And then... Oh, that was released by... Warner Archive, actually. And that was
DVD?
Another thing. Yeah, DVD. That was another thing I was going to say. So let me cover this one, too. So I watched The Guyver Part 2. You just talked about, wait, no, you didn't talk about this.
I recently talked about Guyver, yeah.
Yeah, so the Guyver 2 came out, as well as the first Guyver from Warner Archive. I mean, it's the same fucking movie. It's just, It's so odd, The Guyver 2, because the first Guyver, there's action and karate fighting and kick fighting everywhere throughout the movie. And the second one, there's like one big fight scene in the beginning and then an hour of storytelling. And then it just goes fucking insane with fucking creatures and fucking fighting. It just gets so crazy. But I still love 1 and 2, so that's my coverage on the second one. But both of these are Warner Archive. But when I popped them in, I noticed something. Warner Archive is not doing, like, new discs. They copied the old New Line discs, and they transferred it to their DVD. Like, they didn't even do new menus or anything. All they did was take everything. They copied the fucking DVD.
Yeah, they just...
And they stuck it on another one. No, it's, I'm not saying they, like, cop, like, this is a Bird DVD. Everybody knows that. But it's literally a copy of the New Line DVD. Is Mike walking around?
What's that?
I don't hear his footsteps.
Yeah, I'm standing. I pace when I'm... Yeah,
my God,
I'm high maintenance, man. Come to the Splathouse sometime.
You sound like it. All right, and last but not least, all of films released this. I wasn't expecting much, but this movie fucking kicked a lot of ass. It's a Return of Dracula. I was, like I said, this movie is 19. What year was this? 1958. Yeah, 1958. I should have been more prepared. I couldn't pronounce his name. Francis Larrodaire. He plays Dracula, but it's a really fucking good movie. Basically, Dracula comes back to town. He kills an artist and poses as the artist. The family that is providing a home for the artist hasn't seen that. It's like the uncle. Yeah, hasn't seen him since he was little. So he just takes on this persona of this artist while he's kind of planning his divine plan of taking over and creating a new like Transylvania while all these people are after him because they know he escaped Transylvania. But definitely has some great moments, great imagery. It's got a great soundtrack. It uses the old Mozart was it Dice? How do you say that? It's from The Shining. It's the theme song from The Shining, whatever that's called. I can't remember. Like Dice Ira, something like that. Anybody? You guys suck.
Sure.
a great little black and white Dracula tale. And Dracula movies are always overdone for me. Like every time. Like, it's hard for me to get into certain Dracula films, and this is one, you know, being that this wasn't a more of a well-known one and wasn't kind of like a big Universal production, it kind of, I guess, fell by the wayside for me, so I was like, I'll give it a shot. Maybe it was my low expectations I loved it so much, but it's a really, really good film, so definitely check it out. Of course, Olive in their bare bones DVDs, but, I mean, I'm sure it's cheap, so.
Cool.
That one's DVD, not blue.
No, it's Blu-ray, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that's pretty much it.
We will be talking Manhattan Baby and The Bloodstained Butterfly in just a little bit. But first, Josh Obershaw has the news. Josh, what's up, man?
What's up, everybody? Hope everyone had a great Halloween.
Oh, yes. I do the family Halloweens, you know, hang out and
right.
Walk the kids around the block a few times, get some candy. That's about it. Pretty low key. How about you? What did you, what was your Halloween like?
Well, I am currently a tutor at, the local community college here. So I had to go to work today, but it was cool. I didn't have a costume, but I wore my horror fandom on my sleeve. And it was just fun going to work and seeing a whole bunch of younger kids just dressed up as some crazy shit. And other than that, it was pretty low key. I managed to squeeze in a couple of horror movies, like my annual watch of John Carpenter's Halloween, and also a first time viewing of 976 Evil.
Oh, nice!
Pretty nutty. It was definitely pretty nutty. If people are familiar with that, that's the movie Robert Englund directed, and Stephen Jeffries, you know, Evil from Fright Night. He was great in it. I mean, it's very, very similar to something like Evil Speak, but I think Evil Speak's a little bit more solid. There's something really I felt that was a little off about 976 Evil, but it was pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, that's one of those I always like would look at the back, and those on those the VHS case, like the back was all gory. Like they didn't shy away from showing gory crap. You know, in the little pictures on the back of the boxes. So I always would just kind of stare at that and just kind of like, you know, think about what could this movie possibly be, you know. I finally watched it a couple years ago. So All right, man. Cool. What have you got for us?
Well, speaking of Halloween, a couple of video labels decided to use the most blessed favorite holiday of the year to drop some announcements. And I want to start off with Arrow first, because they announced on Halloween that they are releasing sometime in 2017 the House Collection. And yes. we can assume it's going to be a box set of all four movies in the House franchise, including House 3, which is known here in the U.S. by another title, The Horror Show, which Scream Factory put out a couple of years ago.
Do you think they're going to try to do all four?
One could assume. I mean, it's called the House Collection. I mean, yeah. You wouldn't want to call it the House Collection by having just the first two movies, which are obviously the ones that people know, and just stick House 4 at the end and not have the missing third one. So
right.
I can assume that. I mean, there are no other details other than the fact that it's called the House Collection, and yeah. They said the news is going to be trickling in the next few months. So I guess they're working on sort of fangling the rights, you know, trying to get the third movie from Scream Factory to include in this collection.
Well, I mean, it's been done. I mean, I just mentioned earlier in the show when we were doing the What's on Your Doorstep segment that I got word that the Phantasm set is going to include all the films. So Wellgo USA was able to get Phantasm 2 from Scream Factory. So I don't know if that's why there's the delay, possibly waiting for the rights to, you know, pass from Scream Factory to them. But that for sure is happening. I got for sure confirmation from a very reliable source from, you know. So, but yeah, so it's happened. So maybe that's what's going to happen here with Arrow. Which would be great. I would love having them all in one box.
Yeah, I think that Halloween box set a couple of years ago is kind of like started this trend of, you know, companies working with each other to try and put all of these movies, you know, under one title. And I think it's just fantastic.
Cool. Well, yeah, I can't wait to see what all the news that comes out with that. House 2 is a lot of fun. And
it totally is.
I can't remember House 1. It's like House 2 is the one that I remember the most.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I enjoyed House when I first saw it, but I just remember House 2 just being like the really, really fun one, even though it's a little bit more humor than horror.
Yeah, it's totally wacky.
Just, yeah, it is totally wacky, but I love it. I'm thrilled to finally see that come in the Blu-ray.
I did ask Arrow if they could look into the Carnosaur trilogy, so... I mean, if they're doing the House, you know, collection, they might as well look into Carnosaur. They told me that they would.
All right, fair enough.
They did tell me they'd look into it. So I'm.
Oh yeah, I actually saw that tweet. Okay. Well, moving on, the other big thing that was revealed on Halloween was Scream Factory, because they announced 10 new titles, man.
Wow.
10 new ones coming out in the next few months. And those movies are Tales from the Hood, Dead Time Stories, Firestarter, Demented, What's the Matter with Helen, The Screaming Skull, The Vagrant, which they already put out on DVD as one of their all-night horror movie marathon DVDs, The Angry Red Planet, the movie Virus with Jamie Lee Curtis, and for some reason, The Psycho remake.
Yeah. Fuck that movie. Seriously, I cannot stand that remake.
I haven't seen it, and I refuse to. What's the point?
It's a shot-by-shot remake with different actors. And, I don't know, there's just something about the original Psycho in black and white. The violence of it still feels, I guess, more visceral than what the remake. And the remake tried to add a little more sleaze factor with him looking through the hole in the wall and jacking off. You know, it's just like, I don't know. I don't know. Whatever. But apparently, it'll have its fans, and we'll see all these articles on, you know, how it's a misunderstood remake and everything. But I'm gonna hold by my stance that I cannot stand it. But hey, more power to them.
Right. I guess if you're a real diehard Psycho completist,
yeah,
it's for you. But I don't know. I'm still no. I mean, it's been 18 years, but I'm still very much a no on
that. Has it been that long? Jesus. Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. It's hard to believe. More news. 88 Films just also dropped a bunch of titles that they're going to be putting out on Blu-ray, including The Mighty Peking Man, Amok, Eliminators, which is another Scream Factory title, Killer Constable, Navajo Joe, and a couple of more movies that Code Red are also putting out, Syndicate Sadists and 2019 After the Fall of New York,
which 88 Films is also going to be releasing, I believe.
Yep. So those boy, the ongoing saga of that little
it cracks me up.
It does. And, speaking of Code Red, Vinegar Syndrome announced that they're prepping for Blu-ray a couple titles for 2017, Terminal Island and Group Marriage. And I just saw a tweet from Brian Sauer. He picked up a couple of Code Red titles, and two of them were Terminal Island and Group Marriage.
What? DVDs or Blu-rays?
I'm serious. I looked at the photo. They're Blu-rays. I tried looking them up on the Code Red site, but yeah, guess what? It's not up.
Oh, my God. Wow. They were announced back in May. That's crazy. Wow.
Right.
We shall see what happens there.
Yep. So
if you have any news, I'm sure the Vinegar Syndrome guys, they do listen to the show every now and then. So if you guys have any news on that, hit me up. Curious what's going on.
Yeah. Well, next up from Shriek Show, they're going to be putting out 1971's Dracula versus Frankenstein. And this one is coming out on December 13th, the film stars Lon Chaney Jr. in one of his final performances, J. Carroll Nash in his final film, and it looks kind of hammerish, I guess, but yeah, it's going to include quite a few bonus features. There's going to be an audio commentary by writer-producer Sam Sherman, a documentary on Independent International Pictures. Okay, that's who's putting out. But it's, you know, 70s, it's, I guess it's kind of in that sort of hammerish vein. Rare alternate ending, deleted scenes, the deleted scene with famous Monsters editor Forrest J. Ackerman, and Dracula. Rare 8mm movie location footage, and of course, you know, a theatrical trailer and TV spot. So, Dracula vs. Frankenstein, December 13th. So we got some new movie news that I want to get to. First of all, speaking of Well Go USA, they're going to be putting out Train to Busan on February 27th. And we got a couple from Lionsgate. First up, Rob Zombie's 31 has a release date. That's going to be December 20th. And there's only a couple of bonus features. One is In Hell Everyone Loves Popcorn, the Making of 31 documentary. I don't know if that's going to be as, you know, an expansive documentary as something like what he did with The Devil's Rejects or with Halloween.
I want to say that it is, but I'm not 100% sure. I was kind of bummed that it's not the director's cut, because I heard that he had a director's cut on that. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think I kind of heard something about that too, but nothing I've read that said that it was going to be a director's cut.
Yeah. Oh, well. I'm torn on this. I think I could have bought this for like $6.66 from Vudu. I should have just done that. But I was just going to rent it because I've heard, you know, I've heard mixed things. Yeah, the documentary is going to be about 4 hours.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess if it's going to be like the documentaries that he made for The Devil's Rejects and Halloween, I guess that's worth picking up then. I mean, if you're a fan of the movie, that is. I know it's a Rob Zombie movie. There are fans, and then there are people that absolutely hate it. But if you do like his movies and the bonus features kind of seem light to you, that's probably because the documentary is pretty chunky. So yeah.
I'm not 100%
worth your time.
Yeah, I'm not 100% positive. I know that that has to be because that's the only documentary on there. Some people were saying it was digital only, but I think the documentary is going to be available if you buy it digitally too. I guess I don't know. I'm getting like all these mixed things on this one for some reason.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, I think either way, Rob Zombie making movies is a good thing. So
I agree.
I'll be checking it out.
Cool. Well, Lionsgate also has a release date for Blair Witch. That one's coming out on January 3rd, and it has an audio commentary with Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett. Never Ending Night, The Making of Blair Witch. This is a 6-part documentary. Plus, you also got another featurette called House of Horrors Exploring the Set. So that's pretty cool. So that's most likely going to be like the first major horror home video release of the year. Blair Witch, January 3rd.
Sweet.
Yep. And you guys remember we were talking a couple of weeks ago about the restoration of Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer? Well, that is actually going to get a Blu-ray release as well from Dark Sky Films, and it's going to be available December 6th. So that's just right around the corner, almost around this. Pretty much the same day the Phantasm remastered Blu-ray comes out. I didn't even catch that. That didn't even register until just now. Holy shit. Special features for this one. We got a 4K restoration in defense of Henry, an appreciation. Henry versus MPAA, a visual history. Henry at the BBFC. It's either you or them. An interview with artist Joe Coleman. In the Round, a conversation with John McNaughton, Portrait, The Making of Henry, deleted scenes and outtakes, feature commentary with interview with McNaughton from 1998, the original trailer, the 30th anniversary trailer, a still gallery, storyboards, and a reversible sleeve featuring original Joe Coleman artwork. So, Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, December 6th.
Wow, I never bought this on Blu-ray because I felt like the DVD, like the movie's so ugly anyway that, you know, it was just fine on DVD for me. I'll have to see how this looks. It's not supposed to look very clean, though, you know what I mean? Kind of like the original.
Oh, movie. Yeah. Oh, totally. But, I own that on Blu-ray, and it still looks dirty as fuck.
Maniac, or do you have that this one?
Oh, no, Maniac.
Okay, yeah. I feel like you need to, like, wipe the screen off, like, or, you know, just a layer of grime over the scene, over the TV.
Yeah, there's a layer of grime on me after watching that, so I feel you. And finally, let's go back to Scream Factory, shall we? Now that Halloween is over, you know, Thanksgiving's around the corner, and so is Christmas, which means Black Christmas is coming to Blu-ray, of course, and we have the final list of extras for this 2-disc collector's edition. Disc 1 is going to be a new 2016 2K scan of the negative, audio commentary with director Bob Clark, another commentary with John Saxon and Keir D'Elia, and an audio commentary with Billy.
Hmm.
Played by actor Nick Mancuso. I wonder if that was on the DVD. I wish I had the Critical Mass DVD on me right now, but I think it's boxed up somewhere. But anyways, there's an audio interview with director Bob Clark as well. Disc 2 has the 2006 Critical Mass HD Master. A new interview with Art Hindle called Film and Furs. Victims and Virgins, Remembering Black Christmas with Lynn Griffin. Black Christmas Legacy, a 40th anniversary panel at Fan Expo 2014 featuring John Saxon, Art Hindle, Lynn Griffin, and Nick Mancuso. On Screen, a Black Christmas featurette, 12 Days of Black Christmas featurette, a Black Christmas Revisited featurette, some archival interviews with Olivia Hussey, Art Hindle, Margot Kidder, Bob Clark, and John Saxon. A midnight screening Q&A with Bob Clark, John Saxon, and Carl Zitterer. Two scenes with a new vocal soundtrack. Interesting. And original theatrical trailers, TV and radio spots, an alternate title sequence, and a still gallery. Wow.
Nice. Yeah,
I'm going to pre-order this tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll have to trade in my current Blu-ray. Because I guess they just slap the HD Master on Blu-ray.
I see. So was that the one that was released in Canada only last year? Or was this also by Critical Mass?
Black Christmas?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the one with the white kind of cover with looks like the, you know, Margot Kidder with the bag over her head or something like that. Being choked.
Oh, okay. I think that's the Critical Mass Blu-ray.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been out for a while. I finally picked it up last year, and then now, you know, excited to kind of held out on it. And then now, of course, I'm going to try to unload that and get this, because this one sounds – it sounds like they really – I mean, the video quality on that one wasn't that good anyway. So with striking a new master, you know, and restoring it, I can't wait to see how this looks.
Neither can I.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite all-time horror movies. And, yeah, like I said, I'm pre-ordering it tomorrow. That's a done deal. I'm sold. Yeah. And with that, I bid all of you guys a good night, and we'll see you when we see you.
All right, Josh. Thanks, man.
No problem.
All right, gentlemen, let's dive into these two films here. Let's start off with Blue Underground's release of Manhattan Baby.
That's what I was going to say.
Manhattan Baby.
Mm-hmm. Manhattan Baby.
Manhattan Baby.
Oh, my God.
Did either of you guys get the 3-disc edition?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, cool. The Blu-ray, DVD, and the compact disc.
Yeah, I just have the old Anchor Bay, so I'm excited to hear what's all on this new edition.
Blue Underground is, I've really loved all their recent releases, for sure. So, but yeah, Manhattan Baby, this is a Fulci film, of course. This is one of his later films. And he teamed up again with Fabio Frizzi for the soundtrack, which is included in this set.
Nice.
There's actually a great interview with Fabio Frizzi,
yeah,
about all his work that he did with Fulci. It's very heartfelt and emotional.
It's really great. And that's what I love about this disc. Especially is because if you like Lucio Fulci and all his films, like, this really kind of fills in the gaps on kind of, if you're, you know, the knowledge gaps, especially that I've had, because I've, you know, discovered Fulci and these other directors a little bit later on. So there's a lot I don't know. So the fact that that Blue Underground goes out of the way to really put some really great interviews on here that aren't just kind of little puff things about the film itself, but they're they're about the careers of, you know, the career of Fulci for sure, and Fabio Frizzi. And so even if, like, even if I don't like the film as much, I can definitely appreciate this this release. I wasn't a huge fan of Manhattan Baby. I'm just gonna come out and say it. I liked the beginning. I thought the beginning was inspired with the pyramids and the, you know, that kind of Indiana Jones type stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But once it kind of gets back to Manhattan or wherever they're supposed to be, New York or whatever, it kind of starts, for me, it starts dragging. But it starts to pick up with the Fulci weirdness near the end. So that was my initial gut reaction to the film for seeing it for the first time. But I'm sure both of you have seen this more than once. Am I correct on that?
At least five. For me.
Yeah, I've probably seen it like three or four times.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how is it at revisiting after you've seen it? You know, what was your first, when you first saw this, you know, what did you think of it?
When I first saw it, compared to
how you feel about it now?
Yeah, when I first saw it, I definitely had some of the similar opinions that you just stated. I saw it probably very early on in discovering Fulci. Definitely.
Oh my God, you're gonna solidify my theory. I guarantee it.
What?
Watch. I have a theory behind Manhattan Baby, why people don't like it.
I love Manhattan Baby. But
No. I'm saying that first initial watch.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and I'm sure. Yes, if I'm tracking what you're thinking, then yeah, you're probably right. But I watched it after I saw The Beyond and Zombie 2 for sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
There you go.
So it didn't have that kind of gonzo violence and really just bizarre camera work and storytelling. It's actually like a very well composed film. I think it's beautifully shot. It's one of his best looking pictures, in my opinion. The symbolism that he uses in the movie is much deeper and richer than his previous films, in my opinion. I think it's a fantastic picture. But when I first saw it, Sean, you're absolutely correct. Its pacing is a little bit slower. You really have to wait to the end with the taxidermy attack before you get some of that some of that standard Fulci gruesomeness. But I love it.
Well, the beginning. I mean, there's a shot at the beginning where the guide like falls down the hole. That's just incredible.
That's so good. Yeah,
and I was like, I started rubbing my hand. I leaned forward. I'm like, here we go. And
the first line of the movie, I fucking love when Hacker is bending over to pick up the Egyptian scorpion. He goes, "I'm going to take this home to Susie." And then the guide says, "Well, don't forget to tell her it's a symbol of death." And the dad goes, "That's a little heavy for a 9-year-old." Like, it's a very funny indicator of what's about to unfold over the next 85 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Are you clicking? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, bro, I'm going to call you out now. Are you clicking something? Are you like manhandling your mouse? Like, what's going on there?
What are you talking about?
Here, click, click, click.
I'm not clicking anything.
I'm hearing clicking too.
We hear clicking.
Yeah.
I'm not clicking. My hands are on my dick.
That I believe. You were talking about Sherilyn Fenn naked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
what year
clicking?
Is that movie, by the way?
I'm sorry.
What year is Manhattan Baby?
No, what year is Meridian?
Really?
The Sherilyn Fenn movie.
1990?
Oh, this is like Twin Peaks era Sherilyn
Fenn? Yeah.
Yeah. No, Manhattan Baby's 1982, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. 1982.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had New York Ripper come out that same year, and then Manhattan Baby. And
well, here's the thing, is you said something in the beginning that kind of upset me a little bit. You said this was like later. Well, this is like he made this right in his prime.
Okay.
Like he was coming off of The Beyond and New York Ripper and Conquest and House by the Cemetery. Like he was making all those films. It wasn't until probably Conquest, then his films started being like not as like he wasn't as prominent because he made like Murder Rock, which was great, but it also has a lot of dancing and kind of just craziness. Enigma and Touch of Death and stuff like that came out later than fucking House of Clocks, which I really love, but a lot of people hate. And of course your favorite, Cat in the Brain. So, but I have a theory on Manhattan Baby.
Okay. And I want to hear this.
And, I think the reason why a lot of people are always like, I don't like that. It's because I don't know if they've explored, like, hardcore Fulci fans like Manhattan Baby. People that watch Fulci, like, have seen The Beyond and House by the Cemetery, New York Rippers, Zombie, they're all like, oh, that's his worst movie. Well, I think once you dive into Fulci and you kind of know how his movies are and who he is and working with Dardano Sacchietti a lot, like, his movies are really batshit that aren't so polished and very notable. Like, I think if you watch, like, you know, Door to Silence and Voices from Beyond, Zombie 3 even, like, he has this certain just batshit about him and this craziness. And I like when he explores that as a filmmaker. And coming off Manhattan Baby, he wanted to do something a little bit different because, I mean, all these other Possession and Exorcist films were very popular. And, you know, this was his last film that I believe this is his last film he worked with Dardano Sacchietti, which I know that I think they had a falling out. And I think that's another reason why the film is kind of wonky. Because I think if I remember correctly, it might say it in this booklet, I don't think he stayed the whole entire time of filming. I think that he said peace and he walked away.
I know his last time working with the producer, Fabrizio De Angelis. I don't know. I can't pronounce
his name. That's really good. But I think there was a lot of production problems with the film, and that kind of maybe adds to a little bit more of the craziness. But my theory is that people judge it along with some of his best work.
Right.
I think Manhattan Baby works best with Fulci if you look at it with all his work. Because it feels like a Fulci film. It looks like a Fulci film. Mm-hmm. Like, it bleeds Fulci. But I think that if you are just watching the mainstream Fulci films, then yes, it is very different. And you may not like it. But I think that if you dive into his Westerns...
Ooh, For the Apocalypse.
Yeah, For the Apocalypse is probably one of his best movies ever made.
Absolutely.
And, you know, kind of his even later 90s stuff. I think that people, if you really dive in to watch, and you at least watch, I don't know, 30 Fulci films and then watch Manhattan Baby, I think you'll respect it a little bit more and like it. Because I didn't see Manhattan Baby until later. Mm-hmm. I watched a lot. My first Fulci film was Zombie, because I watched that when I was very, very young. And I love that. And then I know that I bought the Diamond releasing DVD of, it was a really cheap company that released actually The Beyond and House by the Cemetery. The Beyond was released as Seven Doors of Death at the time.
Oh yeah.
But Seven Doors of Death, House by the Cemetery I watched. And then I got into kind of, you know, watching all the zombie films, all the sequels, cause he did, directed part of part three, Murder Rock. And I didn't see Manhattan Baby till later, and I watched it. I didn't think anything of it. I was just like, oh, this feels like a Fulci film. This movie's crazy. I enjoy it. I will say it's one of my, you know, as far as liking it, yes, there's a lot of more Fulci films that I like more than Manhattan Baby. But I don't think it's very different. Like, people are always like, oh, that movie's crazy. It doesn't feel like a Fulci film. No, it's 100% a Fulci film. It's just... In this film, he wants to focus a lot more on the storytelling aspect.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are looking to expect something, kind of more in your face, like his other, you know, The Beyond and everything, with a heavy score and kind of in your face with gore and stuff. And there's some gory scenes. And, you know, we have the bird attack, which is great.
Yeah.
But everybody's like, oh, the bird looks fake. Well, what do you think the fucking pipe cleaner spiders look like in The Beyond?
Yeah, it's also a reanimated taxidermied bird. It would look fake.
You know?
And then to take it one step further, I mean, he really does get in your face. The movie is a collection of shots of people's eyes. It's like,
oh, yeah. Yeah. In their face. No, it's, yeah, as I was going to say, it's very, like, you know, it is very claustrophobic. And it's very, very, you know, it's not as wide as, you know, stuff like Zombie and House by the Cemetery, kind of just how he uses the imagery around and his settings and stuff like that. He does stand very close with kind of just but it's great cinematography. It's, you know, some great imagery, and it's very stylistic compared to some of his other films. As far, like, there's some great shots in his
own. Oh, yeah.
But I think Manhattan Baby looks good throughout the movie.
Yeah. You know, I actually wrote a note down for you, Brad. I was thinking of that show months back where you called out One Perfect Shot. You remember, you're like, all that fucking guy does is he puts up shots that are perfectly symmetrical.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this movie is full of, like, freeze frames that One Perfect Shot would love. Like, he uses symmetry out his ass in this. So it's I definitely thought of you. And then I thought of Rob Hunter, because didn't Film School Rejects, like, combine with One Perfect Shot?
Oh, I don't know. I thought I knew who One Perfect Shot was. If I think about it, I dig I'd find who it actually is, but yeah, I'm not sure.
Anyway,
I feel like they're somehow connected in a way. One thing is interesting about Fulci too, because, like, I have never really dove into his earlier work. I mean, I've seen White Fang, like, as a kid, but then we discussed A Lizard in a Woman's Skin, which is, to me, just an incredible film, and I wouldn't really consider it much of a horror film. So it's like, he really didn't jump into this, you know, everyone talks about Fulci, and they're thinking about is, like, Zombie and City of the Living Dead and The Beyond, but really that's only a handful of years. I mean, really, like, looking at everything, it's from 79, it was Zombie, you know, and then from there, like, through 84 is, 84 Murder Rock, and then, you know, the Zombie, then he's doing Zombie 3 and Cat in a Brain and everything, and steeped into the horror. But I feel like maybe Manhattan Baby was almost like his last attempt to try to do, like, a serious film, you know? Am I wrong in assuming that? Because most of the movie is just, you know, more, you know, not trying to be, you know, batshit crazy Fulci. He's actually trying to tell a story. Am I wrong in that or no?
Yeah, I think you're wrong, because, well, I mean, I think there's a lot of, I mean, The Beyond is kind of batshit crazy as well. Like,
no, yeah, yeah. The Beyond was before this.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, Murder Rock is really crazy. Like, I don't think that Fulci never had, like, I think that's just his style.
Well, no, but if you look at before, like, Lizard in the Woman's Skin back in the 70s and Don't Torture a Duckling, and even the White Fang stuff. Like, I haven't really dove into his earlier work from, you know, the 60s on.
I mean, his westerns are okay. So you're just saying, like, stuff before
starting with
that.
Zombie, I feel like he started getting typecast into this crazy horror director with, you know,
that was more or less maybe The Psychic was what pulled him into that.
Yeah,
it was The Psychic.
Okay,
and Sean, you're saying that Manhattan Baby is his play at more of a restrained.
He was trying to be a little more restrained in Manhattan Baby. Because I was expecting something completely batshit. I mean, look at the cover that Blue Underground's given us here, and, you know, it's very, you know, what you would think, you know, would be a Fulci film. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it very much has a few instances of that kind of craziness. But I mean, it's definitely for me, from the Fulci that I've seen, and I haven't seen a whole hell of a lot, it is pretty restrained for him around that time, is what I'm saying.
Mm. I don't know.
But I don't know. Yeah.
No, yeah.
No?
Because, I mean, dude, Conquest is fucking crazy. And
no, but that's,
right
that's after.
After.
That's after.
Oh, that's right. That was after.
I'm saying, like, he got typecast into just crazy Fulci, you know what I mean?
I don't think it was typecast. I just think that's what he wanted to do. That was part of Sacchietti's style, too. Like, Sacchietti's a fucking crazy dude.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he fucking wrote Blast Spider, where a guy has a shotgun that can shoot rocket launchers. Like, or rockets. Like, you know, and it's just, and he also fucking wrote that, I mean, he loved, like, you know, sword and sandal shit, and he loved doing, you know, post-apocalyptic films. You know, it's just, I think that was a big part of Fulci's just style. And then when he lost him, I think that's when Fulci got a little bit more toned down. He wasn't going as crazy because he was kind of writing the stories himself. So I think...
So maybe that combination of those two guys brought out the crazy.
Yeah, I think
through
time, after Manhattan Baby, kind of mainly probably after Murder Rock, that's when, you know, aside from maybe Enigma, a lot of his films, he did tone it down a lot, and it became more contained and not as crazy. That's just my opinion, though. I mean, I think I've seen at least half of his catalog. You know, as some of his earlier Western films, I don't think are available anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they are, they don't have subtitles. But I think he's a great filmmaker, and he's very diverse. I mean, he made comedies in his earlier years. He made Westerns. He made some batshit crazy horror films. Like, he's all over the place. I've always really looked up to him as a filmmaker, and always, I just know that I'm not going to get something that I have seen before when I pick up a Fulci film. I just know that I'm always going to be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. This, Manhattan Baby, revisiting it, one of the things I really loved was, well, for one thing, seeing it in high definition, which I had never seen before, just watching it on DVD. But his use of color in the film was just phenomenal. It's something I've come to expect from Fulci, but the way he'd use red and blues throughout the picture to signify when someone was being possessed or communicated with through the Egyptian god, I just thought it was fantastic. It would start with very naturalistic lighting, although highly stylized, and almost in camera they just switched the gels so those reds or those blues fell across the faces when you got nice and tight on the eyes. I just thought it was beautiful.
There's a great little interview or Stephen Thrower kind of is on the disc just talking about the film, and he said that this was, like, in this movie, he was messing around with a lot of optical effects,
mm-hmm.
and on set effects more than just like makeup and stuff like that. Like, he was really kind of experimenting and trying to kind of keep up with all these other movies that were coming out in the 80s or around that time that were doing, like, I don't know when Poltergeist came out, but more optical in camera effects, even the post production. They said that he was up like to a few days before the film release, like, still messing with some of the optical effects in post-production.
Yeah, and that'd be like the sand appearing in the bedroom. Yeah.
Yeah, and the little laser type things coming in.
Dude, lasers. You can never go wrong. You can never have too many lasers.
Lasers in the eyes from the Egyptian artifact.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, is we want to talk about lasers in the eyes. It's not the first time that George Hacker, a.k.a. Christopher Connelly, battled lasers, because in Raiders of Atlantis, he asked to battle lasers from, you know, some Pharaoh underground box stone thing.
Yeah.
So, and that's another reason I'm a little biased, because anytime you put Christopher Connelly in a movie, I'm usually always 100% because that's my boy.
Yeah, I rewatching the picture, Christopher Connelly reminded me of late era Sean S. Cunningham. I must have been watching too many Friday the 13th documentaries or something last week, but there were a couple shots where I'm like, man, this guy looks like Sean Cunningham in this movie. But
hey, that's it. Right after that, he made 1990 Bronx Warriors. Don't forget, he played the character Hot Dog.
Hot Dog. Hot Diggity Dog.
But it wasn't – he actually did Raiders of Atlantis later. So, but anyways.
What did you
I'm
guys –
I'm sorry, Brad. Do you like Raiders of Atlantis?
Raiders of Atlantis is one of my favorite films of all time. Top 10 for sure. I mean, Christopher Connelly plays the character Mike Ross, along with Tony King playing Washington, but he wants to be called Muhammad the entire time. But yeah, it's I can't get enough.
So. What did you guys think of the kid actors? I thought the girl was fine. I don't the other kid.
Whoa, Sean, Jesus!
What?
Yeah, it's okay, man.
Huh?
I know Donald Trump's running for president, and he's a. He's kind of popularizing sexual offenses, but you can't just come out saying that girl is fine.
No. God damn it. That's not what I'm saying. Acting wise, Jesus Christ.
The kid's great because, dude, he's played in, like, he played Bobby in the other Fulci film with, oh, fuck, I said it like 1,000 times. Shit. What's the name of the fuck? The dragon through the house sequence. God damn it. House by the cemetery. Jesus Christ. But yeah, he always, and he played in fucking shit. Oh my, I quit. I can't think of anything right now.
I thought
Demons.
I thought
he played in Demons.
Yeah. I thought it looked familiar, but like, I don't know if it's a problem with the dubbing or whatever, but good God almighty. Was this always English? Is there an Italian version on this disc?
No. Well, that's because they filmed it later.
Yeah.
I love it.
That
the
kid annoyed the hell out of me. That's all I know.
I love at the beginning of the movie when you find out they only took one kid to Egypt. They take Susie to Egypt, and they said Tommy has to stay home, or Tommy had to stay home. And then you meet Tommy, and then you immediately realize why they kept that kid in fucking America while they went to Egypt. Tommy's introduction to the movie is him calling his sister a lousy lesbian. He goes, "You lousy lesbian." And Susie's like, "You're just mad because I'm great at baseball."
Wow.
But she is a lousy lesbian. But, I mean, you got to get called out on it if you're not good at it, so.
That's the thing is I want to know, like, that's the one thing about these American and Italian productions is because they did film, you know, or record the audio later, is that was that really in the script? Like,
right.
Did they just like, wait a second, what did he say? No, I'm just going to say lousy lesbian. You know? Oh, yeah, well, I'm good at baseball. Like, you know, it's like one of those things where you just, like, one of my favorite films, this is totally off topic, one of my favorite films is Lady Terminator. And some of the lines in that movie, like one of the guys just walks up to a bar and he goes, "Do you guys serve beer in here or just milk?" And like he hasn't even ordered anything yet. He just like says that out of the blue. And I was like, did somebody really write that in the screenplay? Like, you know, it's just – It's odd, you know, hearing those lines, especially with, you know, this bad dubbing, because it makes you question the people, like, were they reading the script?
Like, yeah.
Did somebody try to use Google Translator and, you know, do this? Obviously, it's not Google Translator. But, you know, that's what it feels like. Like, they copy and pasted a line and then jumbled words around, and then they just did the best they could.
Right, yeah. We'd hear stories of them shooting, you know, these pictures in Italian studios. They're shooting, and then right next door, they're constructing a set for another movie. Dario Argento's talked about this. So, you know, they can use German actors speaking German. They could use American actors speaking English. They could use Italian speaking Italian. And then, yeah, you just fix it in post. You're like shooting it MOS, and you can just say whatever you need to when you're back in the post-production studio.
Wow. Because, you know, and then again, we have like Bloodstained Butterfly, you know, which we're going to talk about next, but the dubbing on that's perfect.
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty,
And it's odd because, you know, Manhattan Baby, that's the way it always will and always has been. But Bloodstained Butterfly, you know, it sounds good. It isn't crazy. It doesn't, it's not jarring when you see them, you know, their mouths like sync up, because it actually does a fairly good job. But it, like sometimes in, you know, Manhattan Baby, people will be talking, you'll hear, but no one's mouth is moving.
there's a lot of like talking through teeth or dialogue that comes just when someone's smiling or something. Yeah.
Let's talk about
Lady Terminator for Raiders of Atlantis.
God damn it, no. Well, let's talk about the soundtrack for a little bit. Fabio Frizzi obviously came in and did some new compositions, and then he brought in, they used, you know, things from City Living Dead, The Beyond, and I think from Zombie as well. And I don't know if I was combining them all, or I've heard those three so much that I kept, you know, recognizing them. But I swear I heard like The Beyond, music from The Beyond, like three or four times. Or I was getting it, you know, confused with Zombie or City of the Living Dead. But I knew that there were tunes I'd heard before. And that totally like took me out of the film. Do you guys have any insight to why Frizzy did that, or Fulci did that? I mean,
well, the cues save money.
Yeah, the cues sound very similar, but it didn't take me out, even because I saw your tweet the other day about that, or wherever you posted, and so I had that in my mind when I was listening to the score on this rewatch, but it didn't take me out. But yeah, there were a couple times where the cues are used very similarly.
Sean, you're really good.
Shut up.
They got to get rid of that fucking saxophone, though, that sounds like Lisa Simpson standing on top of their apartment building.
I want to check out this actual soundtrack. I'm so used to digital music now. I'm like, trying to look it up, and I'm like, oh shit, I got a CD right here. And I'm looking around like, what the hell am I going to play the CD in?
Your computer.
Yeah, I mean, well, my wife's computer, the laptop I was on has no disk drive anymore. Apple's just like, fuck one, CDs. You can
buy one for like $20.
I know, I didn't have one at the time. But I want to hear the soundtrack. But yeah, you know, the reusing of the soundtracks was kind of, you know, for me, a little bit, you know, I don't know, caught me by surprise. But then I remembered that Cat in the Brain did the same thing. So I'm wondering if it's just something that happened in these films.
Dude, you know, it's like even Goblin used the Dawn of the Dead. They use that constantly in a lot of fucking, you know, Italian horror films.
And then I remember that, goddammit, the movie Kick-Ass reused Clint Mansell's theme from the movie Sunshine. I was pissed.
Don't know if that's Clint Mansell.
Who did the score for Sunshine?
Great
film, by the way. Fantastic film.
Is it Clint Mansell? I don't think so.
Calling me on this right now?
Yeah. I'll eat my words if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am.
John Murphy?
There you go.
God damn it. Yeah, John Murphy. Okay,
but
from Underworld and John Murphy. So anyway, it's been done before. I realize that. But I guess I guess there's
but at
certain
least he,
themes that
he,
I hear
the,
that...
He redoes the theme for Kick-Ass and Sunshine. They just literally blatantly took the same soundtrack and laid it over.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, they took in Kick-Ass, it was a remix of that theme for sure, but it was the same thing. But yeah, you know, I realize it's been done, but you know, I got over it. You know, whatever.
I'm glad. Jesus. I thought you were going to harp on it for another 15 minutes.
No. It's just, you know, it takes me out of the film. I was just curious if it, but obviously it didn't really faze you guys.
I guess
at all.
Because we're kind of used to it. Like,
yeah.
Those Italian films, they went the cheapest route possible sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing. That's the reason why the dubbing doesn't take me out of it.
Yeah.
Like, I just get so into it. I don't really, like I said, like I even told you, like I said, when do they use the Beyond theme? Like, I didn't even put two and two together, even though it's so fucking obvious.
Yeah.
And this is, like I said, my fourth or fifth time watching Manhattan Baby, and I've never put that together.
And it's not totally the same thing, but when someone like a Tarantino reappropriates a score, does that take you out as well when you hear like Morricone from
a little bit. It depends on how it's used. I know Tarantino sometimes and those are
sometimes,
always
all the time.
Those are always kind of my those are always kind of my quips about a Tarantino film. Depending on how the music's used, I know a couple times I've been like, why is he using that song?
Right.
But that's just me. I'm very much into music, and
I love it. I think it's the best thing ever.
You know, certain things. Oh, the movie Watchmen had some horrible music cues. Oh my god.
No, oh, Jesus, dude. What are you talking about?
But Zack Snyder, horrible at choosing music for movies.
No, he's the fucking. Oh my god.
the hallelujah during that sex scene was just
dude,
it was
fucking great as fuck.
Nah.
Dawn of the Dead has some of the best fucking songs.
No, that's different. Dawn of the Dead is great. Opening up the Johnny Cash song. Come on, that's awesome.
Fucking Sucker Punch. You give me a break, dude. Washington has like one of the best sound. Like, I thought that was literally one of the best soundtracks of that year.
Really?
You gotta give me a break.
Oh, yeah. Come on, Sean. And that, you know, I love My Chemical Romance.
Dude, they do a great fucking cover
of Desolation Row.
Yeah.
Come on, Sean. Right. I know you love My Chemical Romance.
No, fuck those guys. And then, yeah. Anyway, I get weird with soundtracks. That's just, it's my own hang up. I'm not gonna throw that on you.
It is because Tarantino does a goddamn good job of it.
Most of the time, he does good. Reservoir Dogs, fantastic. Pulp Fiction, pretty damn great.
Yeah, but no. He's taking songs and placing them in the movie.
Yeah, those are pop songs. Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about like Kill Bill, where it's mostly strictly all movie soundtracks. Yeah,
I think
placed in there in Django and Hateful. Well, Hateful Eight's original, but like most of that stuff that he's doing now, he's taking pre-existing songs and throwing them into his movies.
But even in Hateful Eight, didn't he use some of his compositions for The Thing?
Yeah. But I think there was even still some, like, the songs that weren't by Ennio he pulled. I want to say there was at least one.
I feel like Tarantino kind of tries to put a different spin or choose something that you wouldn't expect. So I think for me, it doesn't jump out, you know. I mean, Tarantino, I think, uses it pretty well as far as the scores, because I didn't know in Hateful Eight nothing jumped out at me like, oh shit, that's the theme from whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I would say in that sense I think Tarantino's a little more has a little more finesse with weaving that in there.
But my final verdict is, if I was friends with Fabio Frizzi and he wrote just one score for me and that score just happened to be The Beyond, I would use that fucking thing like till someone locked me up.
Right.
Yeah,
it's happened in other films too. I can't think of any other films off the top of my head. I know that it's happened. I know I've noticed it before, but whatever. It's all good.
He used three songs from The Thing, and used one from Exorcist 2.
Mm. Wow, Tarantino. Yeah, but he like does like the deep cuts. That's what's great about Tarantino. Like, it's not really on the nose, as far as I can tell.
Kill Bill felt like that to me, but that I'm different.
Kill Bill did.
How on the nose is Hallelujah while two people are fucking?
I don't know. I don't know. It just was weird, especially that that version.
No, I know what you mean. The warbly, like
I don't know.
Leonard Cohen.
Yeah.
They use the Leonard Cohen. Yeah.
Was it? I don't think it was the Leonard Cohen version.
No, it was. It wasn't Jeff Buckley.
I'm getting
it. It was Leonard Cohen. I don't think you know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Anyway, I think it was Leonard Cohen, not Jeff Buckley. Jeff Buckley is the more folksy sounding, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever.
Not a good swimmer, though.
Ooh, that's a little too soon.
Burn.
Too soon.
All right. Well, all this said, Grindhouse releasing. Grindhouse releasing. Jesus Christ, what the fuck am I? What's going on? I was
Blue Underground, dude.
Yeah, I was just thinking Cat in the Brain. That's Grindhouse releasing. Blue Underground did a bang up job with this Blu-ray.
And, you're doing a bang up job of introducing it.
I'm a little bit rusty at podcasting for some reason tonight.
It's a little late, Sean. Maybe you need a sip of cup of coffee from Coffee Shop Ahoy.
Yeah, maybe I do.
Or your coconut water.
Maybe you're dehydrated, honey.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, God. Anyway.
Oh, shit.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, God. Mike D's here to derail this show.
I am not. And I sincerely apologize to your audience for my footsteps and my fucking car door. I'm but a poor public educator trying to make my way in the world.
Yes.
Splatcast. Taking us down.
I'm not going to hear the end of that, am I?
Hear the end of what?
Splatcast.
Oh, Splatcast. No, the thing you won't hear the end of is Rocktober Blood.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Hey guys! I found a Rocktober Blood DVD on Amazon. Yeah, it's the same. It's the same bullshit transfer. It's just look. Just give up.
How do you know?
No, because it's released by the Sebastians, the new DVD that just showed up.
I understand that, but how do you Amazon? Know?
Because we've been burned. I'm
starting to go fun. A bit pissed.
I don't think there's any original elements to Rocktober Blood. It's just all fucked.
Well, there's the most original element, which is the Jesus for Doggies commercial that you could get.
Yeah. Right? But hey, it's on remastered from VHS tape, the original VHS master.
Hey.
God damn it.
No, you can mispronounce my show, the Splathouse Podcast, all you want. It's all good.
Splathouse. I don't know why it says Splatcast.
Because your show's called Screamcast.
Yeah, you know. Freudian slip.
Nope.
Freudian slip. Nah, you want to fuck your show.
All right.
The show is fucked.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Anyway, Blue Underground's release of Manhattan Baby. If you're a Fulci fan, ton of good stuff to dig in. The interviews are fantastic. I watched the Fulci and I, which is really, really, really great. And the 25 years with Fulci is pretty great too. But good interviews on here. Stephen Thrower, of course. I always love seeing Stephen Thrower show up. I feel like they took Stephen Thrower to like a church, sat him down, and interviewed him about all these films from all these different distributors.
That's just where he lives.
Is that his house?
Stephen Thrower lives at the church.
No, but he's wearing the same outfit, and he's in the same church. On
that is
the
true.
Arrow,
yeah,
because
across the Arrow ones and.
I'm like, do they just keep him in that room and see if it's over to stay there?
They've kidnapped him, dude.
He's being held hostage by some whatever company does all these. Does Red Shirt just do it all now?
I guess.
But
go sit in your pew, Steven.
But it's great. I mean, I read through the booklet that comes along with it. Who wrote this? Troy Howarth wrote this I don't know, little essay, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah,
and it's really fantastic.
It's funny,
a lot of good
he does the Bloodstained Butterfly as well.
Oh, does he? Yeah, I mean, yeah. They're all these guys. I mean, there's. Yeah, I mean, whenever I hear like Stephen Thrower or anybody like that talk about movies, I'm just like, I'm a fucking dumbass. I know nothing about this shit, and I'm doing a podcast. It's like, what am I doing? Hey, it makes me just want to throw in the towel and just say, fuck it all.
Hey, to cheer up, listen to a Bill Olson commentary.
Yeah. Hey, so did you guys get pizza delivered that day? Is there pizza that day on craft services?
Did you ever have a problem with homeless people walking up and stealing your food? That's a legit question he has.
Oh my god.
Oh do you my guys god. Have like steaks or something?
What do you guys have, bro? What do you guys have to eat that day?
Bill Olson commentary is the fucking best.
All right, let's move into the Bloodstained Butterfly.
AKA the courtroom drama. It's such a good movie.
You're wrong about the contributor to the booklet, by the way. It's James Blackford.
Oh, suck a dick.
And Howard Hughes contributes.
What are you talking about?
There's an article from Howard Hughes in here. Leonard Jacobs.
Dude, I'm talking about Troy Howarth does the fucking essay in this fucking Blu-ray. He also does a fucking commentary about his
video essay.
Oh my god, suck a fucking dick, Sean.
Oh, you mean the video essay, not the essay that's in the book?
The video essay. Okay, yeah. That's a really good video essay, by the way.
Yeah,
really,
and you know who does the soundtrack behind it? Clip Mansell.
Fuck off. Oh my god.
Oh no, wait, it's John Murphy.
I can't breathe.
Do you miss BJ?
Yeah, BJ holds the show together, I feel like. She gives a little bit of
She does. She brings the gravity.
Yeah.
She
keeps us in line. All right. Jesus Christ. Bloodstained Butterfly, directed by Duccio Tessari.
His name's Duccio.
It's Duccio.
Duccio Tessari. Is that right?
Dude, that sounds racist as fuck.
If that's racist, then Mario, a Nintendo Mario, is a fucking racist.
He's Italian. Mario's Italian. The voice guy. American.
Yeah, but it's the most generic. That's Mario. The most generic Italian thing ever.
You cannot tell him how to represent his Italianness.
You're telling me the voice actor for Mario on Nintendo is Italian?
Yes.
God damn it.
Hey, I meant to ask you the other day, because you said somebody asked you about Nicolas Cage impersonations, and you said, I don't think you do a good one. I've never heard you do Nicolas Cage.
I need to watch something first. I'm out of I'm out of practice.
No, I think you should just try it, because it'd be a fucking riot.
Well, Nicolas Cage, you just can't talk about this all the time.
What the fuck is
that? Crazy Nick Cage.
Do you remember I'm the one time. Who was asking for that, Sean?
You were.
I was the one that needs someone to do a Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. I think I just failed it. I just failed the gig. Sorry.
Oh, man.
I'm best with my impersonations if I need to hear it first and then practice. I haven't heard Nicolas Cage. Like, I tried a Nicolas Cage thing in a while. But, all I know is he just gets crazy. Well, he kind of talks a little bit like he has like a golf ball in his mouth.
Oh, man.
I was in this movie about helicopters.
Oh, shit.
Oh. Cage.
Say my favorite line from The Weatherman. Say, a pop, dad, a fucking pop.
A pop, dad, a fucking pop. I haven't seen The Weatherman. So. All right. I was in this movie about this, like... I'm turning to Harry Carey now. Nicolas Cage with Harry Carey. I was watching the comms the other day in the helicopter I flew in the movie. No? All right, where the gee, where the hell did we go?
No, I got the Harakiri. No, I tracked it, buddy.
So it's an American that voices Mario.
Yeah.
So okay,
it totally is. So Mario's a fucking racist,
and he's also voting for Donald Trump.
Oh, fuck Mario. Nintendo can suck a big fat penis.
Just kidding. No idea.
I'm gonna burn this house down now.
All right, Bloodstained Butterfly, directed by.
But I got a lighter.
Dushio who?
Dukio Tassari. Okay, geez, I should just edit all that out.
No.
Anyway, the Bloodstained Butterfly. Actually, this is considered. How are we gonna recover?
You try, but you failed.
Jesus Christ. Serious face here. I really dug the film. And it wasn't what I was expecting from a giallo. I was expecting, you know, more of the standard, like, you know, not necessarily a black glove, but I was expecting more of a, you know, several murders or whatever, like, you know, and then like a detective story to find out who the murderer is type thing. We still get this kind of like detective story, but it's the whole film is mainly centered around this one murder. And then the police, you know, the procedural that they do on the crime scene, and then into a courtroom, more of a courtroom drama, and then more things unfold. And it goes some places that I really, really dug. But once it started going into, like, you know, kind of Law and Order mode with the courtroom stuff, I almost started tuning out until. Other things started happening. I'm being vague because I don't want to spoil anything. Because I really dug the film. I dug the way that all the characters were presented. You didn't really have like one clear protagonist. You know what I mean? It was more of an ensemble with all these people kind of connected through this murder, which I really loved. And I'm unfamiliar with this director's body of work. Judging the film on its own merits, I was really surprised by it, and I really, really dug it. So, what do you guys think about this thing? Brad, were you making fun of the courtroom drama stuff?
No, I liked it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a different approach for a giallo film. It is, you know, it does have courtroom drama, but it's done with some style.
Mm-hmm.
I think the movie was before its time because in the peak of this coming out, we had a slew, and so was it 71?
Yeah, it was like that one year you had like all these giallo films come out.
There's a lot of film. I mean, after, you know, Argento's kind of hit with his film, everybody started making one. It became like the slasher craze at the time. You know, some good, some not, some that were more inventive than others. You know, this is like the final tear of slasher, of giallo. You know, we have very few kills, and it's very character-driven,
mm-hmm.
Not so much plot-based, and final tear was a joke. But it is plot-based, very character-driven, and it is clever. And, you know, it becomes this evolving murder mystery, which is a lot of fun. And it's not... you know, there's a lot of, you know, quote unquote serious giallos out there that are very invasive and in your face, that, you know, focus on the black of killer heavy sense score. You know, this is very classical, score. Yeah.
The beginning of the film is amazing. Like,
yeah, with
the title cards.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Was it Ferio? He did the soundtrack to it. He's done a lot of westerns and shit like that. Yeah,
I think the opening composition is a well known by. It's not by that composer. It's just a well known
Tchaikovsky, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Say it. Yeah. No, that's what it is. He uses the Tchaikovsky. Like theme throughout the film, because that's whatever the pianist hears, mm-hmm. and you know, kind of goes from there. But yeah, like I said, it's an evolving murder mystery, and it's done well. And I don't think it's boring at all. It didn't lose me when it got to the courtroom stuff. It just this is actually my second time watching it. When I when I watched it the first time, I was watching it. I watched, and no shit, I watched every giallo film possible. That's even like kind of the stuff that I was even watching stuff that didn't even have subtitles. Because I was writing a giallo film myself, so I was like, what better way to watch everything? And it took me about 5 months to watch everything. And during that time, it's very repetitive for giallo films sometimes. It's the same Blackgov killer stalking women. And this, you have a woman stalk, but it's basically one murder, and then murder surrounding it. But mainly focuses on the one trying to get down who this killer is. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's definitely different, but it's very stylized, it's very pretty, and it's I don't know. The director himself, he's done. He even did a black exploitation movie with Isaac Hayes.
Wow.
Well, God, I'm so bad with names tonight. I don't even remember. But anyways, I have the soundtrack, but I literally can't remember the name of it. Where's IMDb, Sean, when I need it? But anyways, he did some stuff with Nero. He did the Ringo films. But he's kind of all over the place. But he is a very, very good director. He knows what he's doing. Like, he doesn't want to make – he didn't make something just for a quick buck. He wanted to, you know, even though everybody jumped on the bandwagon to make a giallo film that year, he wanted to do something new. And that's what I appreciate about it.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie in some time. I first saw it in the late 90s, around when I was discovering giallos, probably – around when I was watching Profondo Rosso or Cat of Nine Tails. I was way into Argento, but the great thing about getting into Argento is that there's so many other great directors that you get to discover from there. So I didn't get a chance to revisit it for this short conversation, but it is in my cart at Grindhouse Video to get at their 50% off sale, which is going on now at grindhousevideo.com.
You're better at plugging the shit that's thing than we are.
And also, if you would like to have your ad on the Splathouse podcast, which, no, fucking plain. But no, I do appreciate that you guys aren't spoiling it, because I do remember really loving the courtroom aspect of it. It's not exactly It's Alive 3, Island of the Dead courtroom drama, but but I do remember loving that. And I'm excited to revisit it. I'm a big Arrow Video junkie. I just spent all my Arrow Video money on the Herschel Gordon Lewis set, but this one's in the cart, man.
Nice.
I just had a question for you, Mike, because I don't know, because you said you were watching giallo in the late 90s. How old are you?
I'm 34. I turned 35 next week.
Oh, so you were young when you were dipping in giallo.
Yeah, my director, the guy I've worked with for like 20 years, we went to high school together. We were just super fucking nerds. But yeah, we were all just about collecting VHS tapes. We jumped into DVD really early, just spending every single dollar and dime we could come across to watch some of these pictures. But
yeah, because I think my first giallo was probably Deep Red. Mm-hmm. And I was like probably like 10 or 11. But that was like in the mid-90s. I think that was my first step into it. And then Cat of Nine Tails and stuff later, yeah. So
yeah, Anchor Bay had those great clamshells back in the...
Yeah, the big black clamshells, yeah.
Yeah, love those. But yeah, we were always at Suncoast Video spending my McDonald's money getting the fucking tapes. But yeah, I haven't seen this one in years.
Yeah, it holds up, and even the courtroom drama stuff, it's not boring. Like, they have a good score behind everything. The actors are really good. That's another thing.
yeah,
because I actually, because when I very first saw this, I saw the Italian version, so I wanted to switch it up a little bit and watch the American speaking one, or English speaking. Sorry, and watching that, like, you know, it's still pretty intense. Like, they keep up with, you know, it's not slow-paced at all. Like, the pacing is equal to whatever, you know, the killings are happening around everybody. So, yeah, I dug it quite a bit.
Well, I feel like, don't they kind of play with the timeline a little bit with the storytelling?
Well, they do. There's, like, sequences, which is, you know, for the 70s, you know, it was very new at the time, is that whenever they're, you know, one thing that I did enjoy is that whenever they're discussing the stuff in the courtroom, they do a reenactment, but, like, they're really there talking about it. Like, you're watching the killing happening again.
Yeah.
But, like, the people in the courtroom are actually on the scene of the crime as the crime's happening, that type of thing. I don't know what you call that, like, when that happens in films. I mean, it's more popular now, but, you know, it's kind of like a flashback. But, Mike, you should know. You're in the theater.
Right. Yeah, actually, I was just talking about this the other night when we were watching The Conjuring 2, right? Like, when – are you talking about, like, when Elaine Warren is walking through, like, the Amityville house and she's in Ronnie DeFeo's body and she could see the crime? Is that right?
Yeah. It's very, very similar to that.
Yeah, but this, like, isn't like you can actually see, like, the jurors just kind of in the area watching.
Yeah, they, like, linger around, but, like, the guy that's doing the questioning is, like, in a hat standing on a tree while the, you know, the witness that's in the car is saying, yeah, I saw her right over there.
Yeah.
But she's, like, in the scene again. And that was, like, you know, that was really cool and inventive at the time because
yeah, that's just good storytelling.
You know, and that's what I was saying. Like, you know, there's so many things to this film that are just kind of out there where, yes, it is a giallo, but it's so much more than that. And it really pushes the limits of wanting to do something new and different.
Yeah, I mean, so if you're like expecting this, you know, black glove killer with bright colors, you know, type giallo, you know, slasher, you're not getting that. It's more, yeah, it's definitely more than that.
You say that in such like a negative way.
No, I mean, no, I don't mean that negative at all. Because, well, that's what I was expecting it to be, because when you see the, you know, how the cover is and everything. But once it got going, it was different from what I was expecting it to be, but it was kind of better than what I was expecting it to be, if that makes any sense. Where it was definitely, you know, trying something different. But it was definitely, and it was more of a courtroom, you know, the courtroom drama stuff. And I'm a huge fan of kind of courtroom drama stuff anyway, and kind of seeing how, you know, in the 70s in Italy, like how they would do a courtroom, like they have, I mean, it's like in the US, it's like, oh, you're innocent until proven guilty. You're, you know, you go in and you're with your lawyer, you're in front of everybody, but you're, you know, you're treated on an equal playing field. Like in here, like the guy who's accused in the murder is just shoved into a cage.
Yeah, like it should be, right?
Yeah. So it's, like, it's very alive jarring. Free. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
So he's in there, and it's like, you know, I'm thinking about, like, you know, like the courtroom stuff at the time, and then even at the beginning when they discover the body of the woman in the park, how they just spend their time with the police as they're kind of cataloging things and measuring and, you know, gathering evidence and things like that. Like most of the time, like movies, you know, kind of gloss over that stuff and you kind of get the idea, but it's like, there's like this attention to detail that the film has with that stuff that I found really interesting. And I guess at the end they say, you know, thank you to some police department, you know, for consulting, you know, them and on that, and all that. So you can tell that the filmmakers were very passionate about getting a lot of these things right. You know, whether they got it right, I don't know. But the fact that they were trying and they spending the time to show that, I really dug that aspect of the film.
Cool.
But yeah, I want to see it again because of all the kind of the time hopping, and there's a few little twists and turns, and that I really want to kind of see it again because it's just a well told story, many layers.
Yeah, I really appreciate how Arrow Video's been handling these giallo releases. They're fucking gorgeous.
Yeah. I concur, Mike. I concur.
I concur.
So, kind of like the Blue Underground release of Manhattan Baby, like there's no, you know, there's no like hour-long documentary, but there is this kind of video essay with Troy Haworth, right? Visual essay, they call it.
You're talking about Bloodstained Butterfly, not Manhattan Baby.
Bloodstained Butterfly, yeah. But there's a lot of interviews, and then you have this visual essay. And then you have a really great audio commentary with a couple critics, and I kind of sampled the audio commentary as well. Very informative, very fun. These two are very fun to listen to.
Well, Troy is the one that – Troy Haworth, he wrote the So Deadly, So Reverse books.
Yes.
And oh, I love those books.
Yeah, so he definitely knows his shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it made me want to track down his stuff. For sure, I need to get those books.
Yeah, that's actually what I got my wife last year for her birthday present, is I got her So Deadly, So Perverse, and then the Black Cat, what was that, the double feature?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, see, did he, I'm assuming he contributed to that as well?
I don't know offhand, but I can
assume.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I mean, so he has a few books. I mean, they're pretty pricey, about $50 a piece. Mm-hmm. But the So Deadly, So Perverse.
Yeah, but they're encyclopedias.
Oh yeah, no, they're 50 years of Italian giallo films.
So. Yeah, full color, gorgeous layouts.
Yeah.
Nice size to them too. It's a hefty book. It's nice.
I wonder if he's the one that commented on my giallo article.
Oh, probably. He also has a Fulci book, Splintered Visions. I'm adding these to my wish list.
With your disposable income, your podcast.
I got in some shit today with the wife. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What'd you do now?
No, just a couple days of a lot of things coming in. Just, you know. Yeah. So I won't be buying those for a while, but I will be adding them to my list to some point.
You say this, but we will see mail days in 3 days.
No.
Your wife, like, does she have a condition like Memento where she just totally forgets these arguments about videos coming in and then like the next day it's all fine?
Oh, no. I have to be stealthy if I want to, partake. But yeah, no, she walks into my room and sees, I have like stacks of movies just sitting here because I need to organize, I need to get some shelves. And she just walks in and kind of just gives me the disgusted look and rolls her eyes and walks away.
If you want to distract her from the stacks of Blu-rays, just put some dead hookers on top.
Yeah. Sounds like a plan. Anyway, where were we? But yeah, this arrow set, chock full of stuff. Are you guys familiar with Alan Jones and Kim Newman? They're the ones who did the commentary.
Tom Jones.
Not Tom Jones. I met Tom Jones once.
Hey, it's not unusual.
Did I tell you guys I met Tom Jones once?
Did you really?
I was a server in Clear Lake, Iowa, and we would have some people come through because there's the Surf Ballroom is the last place that Buddy Holly performed. He crashed right after his performance. And so every year they've restored the Surf Ballroom. Every year they have like they call it Buddy Holly Days. So there's always like people coming through, stopping in Clear Lake to take a look at the Surf Ballroom and then move on. I think he was performing at the Surf Ballroom like that night or the next day, but he was at the bar smoking a cigar in the restaurant that I was working at and complaining about how us Americans put way too much ice in our drinks.
That's right, dude, because we make Disney Cokes. That's what I call them. They're called Disney Cokes because we just have a giant glass full of ice. Mm-hmm. That's what Disney does to save money.
Yeah.
They just give you a bunch of ice and a little bit of soda.
He was
pissed. You just put like 8 ounces in instead of...
Yeah, that's why you get like draft root beer where they don't put ice in that shit. That's how you run shit in this fucking town. Tom Jones is right.
He's like, you Americans and your ice. Take out some of this ice and put some more whiskey in here.
Yeah.
What country do you think Tom Jones is from?
Yeah, I was about to say.
I was trying to talk, but then I was like getting all like my throat was starting to get like phlegm and stuff. So I totally ruined that.
Oh, that sounds really gross.
Yeah.
Say you Americans with your dehydrated coconut milk.
Yeah. You Americans and your dehydrated coconut milk.
Bro.
Bruh. And then I actually waited on Quiet Riot once. That was a trip. They all had wigs on.
Really?
The lead singer was balding back in the 80s and he had like a full head of hair. So I was like, either you got some major implants or was wearing a wig.
I worked for Best Buy for years and I met Dee Snider in full Twisted Sister regalia. That was pretty fun. Took the opportunity to ask him about Strangeland.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then, is he as nice as he like seems to be?
Yeah, he's a sweet dude.
Yeah, he's really nice.
Yeah. I mean he showed up at this party for Best Buy managers or whatever position I had at the time. So I mean I'm sure they paid him $30,000 to do it. But if I got paid $30,000, I'd be a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Like I'd say the name of someone's podcast correctly.
Splatcast.
Splatcast.
See, Mike, dude, if you would have paid me a little bit of cash, I probably would have got it right.
See, I know you haven't even listened, Sean, because you would have our theme song stuck in your head, just like Brad showed. You know?
Yeah.
But
I'm glad you picked that up.
It's on my to-do list.
It's a watch pile.
Well, I mean, I have no commute, so I don't listen to any podcasts like at all. And my work, I can't put my headphones and work because I always get interrupted. People are, the way my office environment is. So I have a hard time getting to podcasts.
I do it when I masturbate.
I have a kind of weird masturbating with Mike's voice in my head. In my ears. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it, but
a little awkward.
But 9 out of 10 dentists do recommend it. So, and then the other person I met was, I met lots of people. This is a fucking dumb conversation. In fact, I'm not gonna. All right, you met
Tom
Jones.
Hey, you know who I met?
Yeah,
I met Pete Rose one time.
Oh my god,
he was a total dick.
Well,
oh my god.
I'd expect that, I guess. All right, so anyway, the Blitz Day Butterfly from Arrow. Fantastic disc. If you're a fan of GL and you want something a little bit different, I would definitely recommend this one. I think we're all recommending this one, right?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
I am recommending it, Sean.
Yeah. All right. Great. Fantastic. Let's
you can buy a Grand House Video 50% off.
Let's close the show out. It's getting late, and we're gonna start, name checking all the people we ran into, celebrities. If you keep on going. But yes, definitely check out our sponsors. Go to grindhousevideo.com. He has an Arrow sale going on right now. Is he doing it all month?
It's all month.
All month long, month of November.
Because it's their 2-year anniversary.
Hell yes. It's 50% off of the MSRP. I know people were bugging him saying like, hey, you have the Herschel Gordon Lewis side listed for $140 and it's only $115. It's not 50% off. But it's like it's 50% off of MSRP. So, God damn it. Relax. I can never run a store because I would just mouth off to way too many people. A lot of good prices on there. I need to stock up on a few things as well. But
you can't.
I can't.
You'll get yelled at.
Yes. It is what it is. But check that out. Also, check out our other sponsors. Go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors. Buy shit from Vinegar Syndrome. Check out Horror Pack. Check out Coffee Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, buy Death Row Game Show and Hobgoblins, please.
Hell yes. I have Death Row Game Show on this gigantic Mill Creek 200 film piece of shit DVD box set that Brad told me I should buy. because I think it's just because I think Raiders of Atlantis is on there. And Death Row Game Show is on there. I was like, holy shit,
yeah!
I could have seen this. I could have seen a ripped up, crappy print.
Is Raiders from Atlantis on that set, though, Brad?
It is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's on the sci-fi set, too, from Mill Creek.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
Manos Hands of Fate is on my horror box set. It's probably a horrible transfer, but...
We just did our Manos the Hands of Fate episode yesterday.
Somebody went in front of a bunch of anti-abortion protesters with all the posters and stuff with the Manos like costume and stood in front and took a picture.
with the master costume?
Yeah, the big M.
Yeah.
And I didn't really get the reference because I haven't seen the movie. And then I was like, that looks familiar. And then somebody's like, oh, that's Manos, Hands of Fate. And I was like, oh, shit. So I Googled it, and I was like, it was spot on. Pretty funny. Don't know where I was going with that. Music provided by Wolfman of Mars. Logo designed by Kevin Spencer.
Hey, what about your pins, man?
Oh, yeah, shit. Pins. See, we're horrible at plugging our
pins.
Stuff.
Hey, actually, can I testify to this? Because I actually purchased the pins. They're a great deal. There's these two beautiful pins that Screamcast has available now. There's Oily O'Bannon, right?
Yep.
From Return of the Living Dead inspired. And then there's the ballet dancer from Suspiria.
Bloody Ballet.
Yeah, that's a better
those
name.
Just came in. They look phenomenal. Like,
yeah.
They came in today.
They look fucking gorgeous. So.
Yeah, I can't wait to receive mine. I ordered both of them, $20 for two. Like I said earlier, I usually get my wife a movie-themed birthday present. This is going to be part of her little package I'm putting together for her this year. So thank you guys for that.
Very nice.
But yeah, I also thought I was confused the last time you did this pitch because I thought there was an $8 shipping fee.
Nope, just international.
For international. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, just international. So yeah, $10 flat rate for U.S. shipping, and then $10 is all you pay for the pin and everything. And then yeah, you got to add on $8 because shipping gets crazy. Shipping's ridiculous. But all of you who've bought these pins, thank you. I think Brad, you sent out all the Oily O'Bannons so far.
The second batch.
I have to give Brad another spreadsheet full of the new orders. So be patient with us. We're just figuring this out. But I think we're doing a pretty damn good job. Brad has been handling the brunt of the shipping stuff. So
while dealing with life.
Good job, Brad. I was on vacation, so I couldn't do anything.
Yeah. You guys kick ass.
I printed up a spreadsheet.
you did great. And also one thing that because we get our pins from getlapelpins.com, and you're obviously more than welcome to have pins made from them. But one thing they are doing that I wanted to promote that's not horror related or a plug at all, they are doing a thing called a Smile Train. Where it's basically $30 gets you a pin. However, you are donating for untreated cleft lips. So they are trying to do this kind of fundraiser to provide to saving kids. Cool. with cleft lips. It looks like there's like a smile, like smiley pins is what you get. And them doing different smiles. But anyways, it's called Smile Train. And they just started out trying to raise money. So if you want some cute smile pins and save some kids, it's probably right up your alley. See, we do have a heart here at the Screamcast.
Very cool.
Yeah, you do.
Even though we're dicks most of the time.
And we fuck up naming, plugging people's podcasts and naming directors.
That's okay. I could plug it right here. Yeah.
Yes, Mike. please plug away. Where can people find you online and all that shit?
Yeah, if you could believe it, we have a highly professionally produced podcast over on splathouse.com.
It's true.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Blueberry, like whatever, wherever you get a podcast, I think. But we have a cool show. We drop every week. We do about an hour-long episode where we look at a particular film. We interview directors, actors, famous fans of the movie. We play some games, a little bit of comedy, a little bit informational time, but a lot of fun. I do it with my theater friends. We used to do live retellings of classic movies out here in the Bay Area. And now we just decided to do it every week on a podcast.
Cool.
So our next episode is November 12th. We come back with Splathouse Miami Connection.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I think if it works out, Sean will be on that show.
Yes.
Yeah. And Brad was on our first episode where we looked at Boarding House.
Nice. I'll have my people call your people. We'll work it out.
Yeah. Yeah, you DM me, bro.
And, of course, you can find all our shit over at thescreamcast.com, all of our social media links and all that stuff. Head over there. Grab those pins. I just sold the last mug. No more Screamcast mugs. They're all gone.
To my mom.
To your mom.
My mom bought it.
Karen, I'll be getting that out shortly. I apologize for the delay. I was on vacation.
It was funny. She was like... She was because she bought pins, you know, because she was super supportive. She's like, I saw a mug up there. I didn't know you had mugs. I drink coffee every morning.
I'm going to send her some Coffee Shop of Horrors coffee, too.
So, but anyways.
Yeah, so
mom supports us, too.
If people want mugs, if that's still a thing you guys want, just hit me up and let me know. I can order another batch, but it took like 2 years to sell through my supply of like five. So, you know, but they're cool mugs, man. I use mine every day. So, all right.
Drink coffee shop before or dehydrated coconut water.
Yeah. All right. That's enough. We're out. Thank you guys so much for checking out the show. We'll talk to all of you next time. Bye-bye.
Peace out, bro.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.